Well, good morning. We're in Luke chapter 20. We'll be turning there. Luke chapter 20. Our sermon this morning is going to be different than I guess any sermon probably that I've ever preached. And in a way, the sermon is not an expository sermon. We're going to talk about our text, but I want to talk to you about some things that I've been mulling over for about 45 years now. And a lot of the things that I want to talk about this morning are things that I do not have answers for. And you're going to think perhaps that I've got something figured out or something up my sleeve or whatever, but I don't. All right, I want to pose some questions to you just to get you to thinking about a lot of things. You see, I've entitled the sermon, How to Not Pay Taxes But Have a Clear Conscience. And I'll go ahead and answer that and get that out of the way now. The way you don't pay taxes but have a clear conscience is not having income. So we've got that figured out. All right, Luke chapter 20. Luke chapter 20 has been called the chapter of questions. If you see there, I've got a list of the verses in which there's a question. You can see them there, 2, 4, 15, 17, etc. Some of these questions are posed by Jesus. Several of them are posed by the Pharisees or someone who is trying to test Jesus or to tempt Jesus or to trick Jesus. And that's primarily the ones that we kind of focus on. But a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the question of authority. That was the first question that they had for Jesus. By whose authority do you do all these things? We talked about that. And this second one, a test that they present to Jesus, is found in verses 20 to 26. So let's read our text, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. Acts chapter 20, beginning in verse 20. And they watched him and sent forth spies, which should feign themselves just men. Now, that's interesting. You have to feign yourself to be a just man. All right? That they might take hold of his words, so that they might deliver him unto the power and authority of the governor. Verse 21. They asked him, saying, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Is it lawful for us to give tribute to Caesar or no? But he perceived their craftiness and said unto them, Why tempt you me? Show me a penny. Whose inscription and superscription, or whose image and superscription has it? They answered and said, Caesar's. He said unto them, Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, the things unto God, the things which be God's. And they could not take hold of his words before the people, and they marveled at his answer and held their peace. First of all, look in verse 20, and we see the purpose of this particular question. It says that they watched him. The Pharisees did, and they sent forth these people that perhaps had not seen Jesus before. Jesus did not know them, and they were going to trick him. And the first thing they had to do was act like they were just men. So apparently, they were putting on a show. Apparently, they were not just men to begin with. But they came acting this way so that they might trick Jesus and place him in a position that they could deliver him unto the Romans, the authorities. And so that's the purpose of this question. It's the purpose of two or three questions that they have asked or will be asking Jesus. Then you notice in verse 21 the flattery that they pour upon him. They clothe their question with flattery. Master, we know that you say and teach rightly. Don't you know it just irked them to say those words? Even though they were telling the truth. We know that you say and teach rightly. You don't accept the person of any, that is, you don't show partiality to anyone. That surely they were, perhaps were thinking about the times that they had seen him eat at the house of sinners or talk to sinners or touch wicked people or heal people that they didn't think deserved healing. But you teach the way of God rightly. So they pour the flattery on to Jesus. And then they throw out this question. Is it lawful for us to give tribute or to pay tax to Caesar or not? Should we do it or not? Now this tax that they're talking about was not a burdensome tax. It was a tax that every person had to pay just because they were alive. And it was the equivalent in our day of about a day's wages per year. So we're talking about whatever a day's wages is for the average person in each year, that was the tax. So it wasn't like it was going to break you. But it was the idea the Jews hated it because it was paid to the Romans. And their idea was that we have no king other than God. And don't ask us, it's just preposterous for you to ask us to pay tax to Caesar, who you say is Lord. So here's their question. And Jesus says that Jesus perceived their craftiness. And Jesus could do a lot of things as far as reading minds, but I believe I could have figured this one out myself. But they had something up their sleeve. Jesus asks them, why do you tempt me? He lets them know he knows what's up. Why are you doing this? He says, show me a coin. Show me a penny. Whose picture do you see on this penny? And they say, Caesar's. And so he gives them this answer. Render unto Caesar the things which are Caesar, and unto God the things which are God's. This statement that Jesus makes at the same time answers their question and forces us to answer a question as well. All right? Now, this question, the answer that Jesus gives to the critics there, silences them. Now, the answer to his question about authority, I think, probably angered them. In fact, it did anger them. This one silences them. We're going to get on over in a week or two to another question that they present to him. And they almost compliment him with his answer and his getting out of the trap they set for him and almost pay him a compliment. Now, we've all heard this text before. And a related one that usually kind of goes with it from Romans chapter 13. And what I want to give you to begin with is, you see on the outline, number one, the typical takeaways from this text and the text in Romans 13. And I want to go ahead and read the text in Romans 13 as well. So if you want to turn there, you can. If not, make sure you listen to the scriptures as I read them. Romans chapter 13 will be the first 8 verses. Where Paul says to the church at Rome, let every soul be subject unto the highest powers. For there is no power but of God, the powers that be are ordained of God. Did you catch all that? The powers that be, whatever powers you live under, no matter how righteous they are, no matter how wicked they are, those powers that are controlling whatever country you live in, those powers are ordained by God. Verse 2, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. They that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. All right, now the first couple of verses I don't particularly like to start with. All right? It kind of warns me about not doing what I've got in mind to do. All right? And now he says something that I find it hard to believe. All right? Rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Will thou not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good. Thou shalt have praise of the same. Yeah? Right? For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay you tribute also. So here's our connection, or similar to the previous text in Luke. Pay tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth one another hath fulfilled the law. So with that text, in our text in Luke chapter 20, we have covered two passages of Scripture that are very familiar to us. I'm sure that most of you have probably heard a sermon or three on these two passages. Render unto Caesar things which are Caesar. Render unto God the things which are God. And generally, I've got some points here that are going to be what conclusions are drawn from those passages. And I will tell you up front, I believe every one of them. First one is this: obey the government. That's the first thing that we can draw from this, that we are to obey the government. And I want to add to that, you ought to like it. Okay, it ought not to bother me to obey the government. The second one is this: pay your taxes. Pay your taxes. And I want to add to that, it ought not to bother you to pay your taxes. I ought to enjoy paying my taxes. The third one is this: the government has no business demanding that you do something that God forbids. All right, this is another takeaway. The government has no business demanding that you do something that God forbids you to do. And I would like to add to that, that you ought to enjoy. The fourth one: the government has no business forbidding you to do something that God commands you to do. The government has no business forbidding you to demand something that God commands you to do. And you ought to enjoy the truth that's presented there. Now, I told you I agree with all of those things, and I do. But for some reason, I have this feeling that the answers here leave me less than satisfied with my understanding of these texts, these verses. But the one thing that I am sure of, I've got it written down here, I am sure of this, that I should welcome the opportunity to give to the hand whose benefits I receive. Do you receive benefits from the government? You do. I don't know if you recognize it or not, but you do. A lot of them. A lot of them. And because you receive benefits from the government, it should not bother you to give and to participate in the furtherance of the government. You should feel actually responsible to do it. A responsibility to do so. So, I believe those things. Now, I wanted to, let's talk about just a little bit the sharing the cost of government benefits. I've got a little homework here for you. Make a list of the things that you make use of that the government pays for. Now, let's just have a little share time here right quick. Somebody name me one thing that you make use of that the government pays for. Roads. Everybody on them roads, aren't they? Roads. Okay, name me another one.
Healthcare.
Clean water. Fire protection, police protection. Okay. Military protection. All right. I saw recently as somebody interviewing some people on the street in Seattle that were wanting to get rid of the police, defund the police. We don't need the police. Everybody just can get along. And the guy asked her, said, well, what are you going to do if somebody breaks in your house? Call the police. I don't know how they could not see the stupidity of their answer. All right? Anything else that you can think of that you make use of that the government pays for? Organizational structure. Okay, I had never thought of that one, Sharice, but that is a big one. What about if you drive across the top of Heber Mountain and you look across and you see the lake and you see just the beauty of this place? Or some of you who live and you look at it out your back door every day. And you enjoy that, don't you? And the government pays for your beautiful view. Now, you might be somebody might be saying right now, some of the stuff I'm paying for now. Yeah, you are. I didn't say you didn't pay for it. I said your government, or you didn't help pay for it, but the government pays for it. You enjoy it. You make use of it. National parks, state parks, all of these things and more we make use of and the government pays for. Schools, that's a big one, right?
Sewage.
Okay. Air travel. Safe air travel, okay. All right. All right, so, and here's the idea that a sense of common sense ought to tell you, if I partake of all these things, I ought to pitch in and help. Suppose that there's a group of men who have a breakfast group, and once a week or once a month they meet for breakfast, and it's five or six guys, and they have a pot there that they're going to pitch in and pay for the breakfast. They get one check, you know, the waitress comes, she says, you know, do you want this in separate tickets? No, we want it just all together. And so they get their breakfast, and at the end of their powwow time or friend, you know, fellowship time, they just, each of them put money in the pot, and they trying to pay for their breakfast and give the waitress a good tip. But there's one guy in the group that never remembers to bring any money, or he sticks in a dollar or two, you know, for a $10 or $15 breakfast, he doesn't, either has an excuse that everybody kind of rolls their eyes, you know, to each other, or what, but it becomes apparent that this dude is stingy. And when he's not looking, you know, they kind of roll their eyes at each other. Yeah, oh, so-and-so, tightwad Joe, you know. He's not going to put in over a dollar or two every week. And what do they what does kind of reputation does Tightwad Joe have within the group? All right, they may not verbalize it to him, but you know how what they think, right? And that's, or I hope he doesn't show up so you don't have to pay his part, right? And that's the way people ought to look at someone who is not willing to pitch in and make sure that they pay their share for government benefits. All right, it's the same principle, just on a larger scale. We ought to see that. Common sense ought to tell you that, yes, I ought to pitch in. I ought to be willing to help. Now, how can that be so hard to see? How can it be so hard to be willing, us to be willing to do that? You see on the outline there, something happened, and I want you to see if you know what this is. Something happened, or remember what this was, somewhere around 1976. Something happened that started me personally on a quest to understand what these scriptures mean. Anyone know what it is? Nope, that was 73. Oh, maybe not. No, you ain't going to know. Let me tell you. It was the time that I, for the first time, filled out an income tax form and sent it in. Okay? First time I paid taxes on a 1040 and sent it in. And until then, I hadn't thought a whole lot about it. I mean, when you're a kid and you work, usually don't have to pay taxes on that. But there came a point where, I was making enough money or had, moved away from home or got married. I'm not sure what the circumstances were, but I had to fill out a tax form. So I began to think about this and think about, I'm paying this money, what's it going for? What am I getting for my buck? And so I began to think about all this stuff. And here's this verse that says, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. And in my quest for truth, I honed in on this one phrase, things that are Caesar's. I thought, I found it. What things are Caesar's? Is my $100 Caesar's? I'm willing to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, but what if they're not Caesar's? What if I can convince myself that they don't belong to Caesar? They belong to John. So those are the things that I begin to think about. And you've thought about them. Ain't just me. All right, what if, and I begin to think of instances where I know my tax money goes to fund immoral things. My tax money goes to pay for abortion. My tax money is used in illicit ways to line the pockets of some politicians or some presidents or some president's son. Names are withheld to protect the guilty. My tax money is used to illegally prosecute Christians. Now, I may not have seen that in my early years, but I'm seeing it now. Freedoms are taken away from groups that fall out of favor with the government. Should I pay taxes to support those kinds of things? Now, I'm telling you, I've got more questions than I have answers. All right? There's a statement that says a fool can ask more questions than a wise man can answer. I'm the fool. I've got lots of questions to pose to you, to mull over and to think about. Christians' property being taken away. Churches being shut down at the slightest pretense. You remember what happened when COVID came along, and I'll kind of rehearse the thinking that was in our church at the time, or the elders of the church. You know, COVID came along and nobody knew what it was like. You know, we didn't know how bad it was. And for all we knew, we might all be dead in a week, you know, from this horrible virus that was going to get us all. And our state recommended, or they had a mandate, but it was not a law, that churches not meet. And we didn't meet for, I think it was 7 weeks that we missed and didn't meet. And Susan and I had discussions about this, you know, and, well, what's a mandate? You know, is it some, are we violating the law if we don't meet, or if we meet? You know, what's a mandate? You know, and so we talking all this back and forth, and then at some point after 7 weeks, the elder board decided to resume church. Now, everybody wasn't ready at 7 weeks. And that's okay. All right, some people were ready at 3 weeks. Some people weren't ready until 15 weeks. You know, I don't know. But, you know, all of us had to make up our own mind about, you know, what we ought to do. And so we, you know, thinking this through, when we started meeting, and I think we were probably one of the first churches that actually started meeting in the area. So we met. Then you hear the story about John MacArthur's church. And I guess it was, we heard about it because he's a prominent Christian speaker and preacher and leader. And in California, I think it was more than a mandate. I think they were saying, you know, don't meet. And it wasn't but a few weeks later, and their church, running in the thousands, decided they were going to meet anyway. So they did. Now, what I'm fixing to say right now is speculation on my part, because I'm not sure about what I'm fixing to say. That's what I kind of read between the lines. I thought it was the case. The reason they started meeting that was given was this: God commands us to meet. And the verse that they used to back that up is in Hebrews. I got it written down here somewhere. Hebrews 10:25, I think it's where it's at, where the scriptures say, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Susan and I were discussing that, and I asked her, I said, what's the idea there in those two verses? What is God wanting the church to accomplish? Now listen to the verses again. Not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. What is God wanting and telling the church that they need to accomplish? Exhorting one another. Face to face, exhorting one another. And I asked, me and Susan was talking about this, and I made the comment to her, what if, or is it possible, I mean, that verse doesn't say go to the church building, does it? No. The idea is to exhort one another. Can you exhort one another without being in this room? Yes, you can. You can. So my question was, should they have found an alternative to obey God and be found exhorting one another, but also obey the government and not meat. But then there was something else in play. And this is speculation. Don't quote me on this. The state of California was telling churches do not meet. But you could have a bar meet. You could have all of these things that drew sinful pleasures of men. They could meet, but not church. And it looked to me like that his church said, we will not stand for that kind of persecution. You will not call us out to keep us from meeting, and you'll let all these other things meet. We won't put up with it. So they didn't. Now that may not, there may be more to it than I'm saying, but it looked like that. So the church challenged the government's mandate, the government's law, perhaps when they had an alternative. But they did let the government, put the government on notice, you cannot, and we will not allow you to treat Christian people this way and go unchallenged. Because if you get away with this, what's it going to be next time? So they challenged those things. What about other issues similar to that that we see going on, you know, in the world today? What about baking cakes? I mean, we see instances all the time where someone is accused of a hate crime because they try to speak the scriptures. And yet other people can say the same thing and there's no problem. All right, a Christian can quote a verse from the Bible that talks about homosexuality being a sin, and I mean there's the fur flies, doesn't it? And yet the Muslim community can, maybe not in the United States, but can stone people because they're homosexuals. And what do those same people do? Nothing. All right, I think they're afraid. I think they're afraid to challenge the Muslim community for worse things. I mean, Christians don't kill them. They'll stone you. So all these kind of things have been going on in my head for 40 years. You wonder what was in there, didn't you? Now, here is the problem. In our text today, Jesus says, render unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. Do you know what Caesar would have done? If Jesus had have said, don't, still saying what he said, if he had said, don't give a dime to Caesar. God is our Lord. You pay tribute to God, not to Caesar. More than likely, Jesus would have been killed by the Romans that day. All right? Probably wouldn't have been a trial. If it had, it had been a short and sweet. Kangaroo court. But it's over. They will kill you. The Roman government and the other things that Jesus and the way they dealt with unsatisfactory behavior in that day was pretty severe and it was pretty quick. And that is the context in which Jesus is saying, render unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. It's the same kind of context over in Romans chapter 13 where Paul says that the government is there for your good. The government was much harsher in that Paul's talking about than our own government. But he says, obey them. Those are things I think about. How does this work? Now, right here under this number five, all some other things that bother me. You see this one here. Being openly obnoxious or unkind to government officials is just wrong. It's wrong. And it will win you no friends. Several years ago, I don't forget what the context was, but I was talking in a sermon, and I used the verse where Jesus said, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Okay, a serpent is not, in my opinion, a good thing. But he says, be wise as a serpent, yet harmless as dove. For 40 years, I've been sort of waging this private war that I have within me with the government. And I doubt if God's impressed with it. It may be that God is saying to us, you want to handle it your way? Go ahead. Go ahead. You know what changes I can make to our government system and our taxation system? None. You know how difficult it will be for God to straighten it out if he gets good and ready? Not hard. Not hard, not long. When he gets ready, he can do it. Then somewhere in my thinking, somebody mentioned to me, what about the American Revolution? Were they violating these scriptures when they rebelled against the King of England? Looks to me like they were. Now, years ago, you could say that, and boy, the patriotism among us would flare up, and we couldn't bear the thought that our ancestors that fought in the Revolutionary War might have been disobeying Scripture to do this. But I've done a little reading about why they had the Boston Tea Party and all those kind of things, and that's insignificant to the things that I find wrong with the government. It was much of nothing. It was an excuse. An excuse. Perhaps they should not have done that. If they were justified in American Revolution, I'm ready to go. Okay, we've got grounds for a revolution, all right? Because it's a lot worse going on in our day than it was then. So let's end with these thoughts. What if? What if you had to approve or disapprove every tax dollar that was spent? You were not the president that could veto things. You had more power than that. They could come to you and say, okay, Mike, what do you want to do about this issue? Do you approve of the tax dollars going to this, or do you disapprove? What is one thing that Mike would cut out?
Come ahead. I've got a list.
Name me just one. What would you quit spending tax dollars on?
Just one?
Yeah. Okay, money spent on abortion issues in many ways, or several ways. Okay, somebody else name one. What would you cut out? What would the dollars be spent quit on?
Caesar always gets rich.
That's it does.
Rubs me the wrong way.
It does me too. All right.
I don't get any
private
money.
Yeah. All right. Obama. They come across the border and sign up for stuff. All right? Anybody else?
National Endowment of
National Endowment of the Arts. There's a good one. Huh? Eminent Domain. Oh, that's a touchy one there. Okay. Policing the world, paying money to be our friend to different countries, just to be our friend. Yeah, that's a good one. I'd cut out the congressional pensions. I mean, today. They might have signed up under that agreement, but it'd be over with. Today is over. Do what? Yeah. Yeah, anybody in the government gets a pension. Not anybody. Maybe not the military. All right. So here's all these things. What if taxes were made voluntary with no penalty for not giving? How much would you donate? I know it won't work, but I'm saying what if? What if they were made voluntary? How much would you donate? You don't have to pay your tax. You don't have to fill out the forms. Just donate something. How much would you donate?
I figure it wouldn't take long for us to change our mind about how much we donate.
You know, here's the right down the road here is a cemetery. That cemetery is close to 200 years old, I suppose. And Susan has a lot of relatives buried there. Her daddy's buried there. And we have intentions. In fact, we feel an obligation to donate to that cemetery because they do not charge for a gravesite. In fact, it's in their bylaws. They cannot make you pay for a gravesite. So lost people that have no connection to there go there to get a free gravesite. We feel an obligation to donate to that cemetery because she's got folks there. And we have good intention. And a year will go by and we forget. The next thing you know, it's been 5 years since we've, you know, given anything. I mean, anything. That's easy to get there, you know what? It's easy to get there. Because, and they're not rolling in money. All right. And I can tell myself, you know, if I give $100 a year, if everybody that had folks there gave what I give, they'd be okay, $100. So what am I doing already? I'm wishing, looking for ways not to give any more than my fair share in my mind, all right? And, you know, the next thing you know, you don't give. I suspect I'd be that way if my taxes was that way. What if it became illegal to own firearms? Would you obey the governor to turn yours in? In other words, there's one thing that it sounds like there's a pretty good consensus here that most of y'all, it sounds like, are going to disobey the government.
Turn the ammo in first, one at a time.
You're going to disobey the government and resist the government's laws to be armed. What if they change our Constitution? What if somebody sues it and it goes to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court says, you know, that's way back when the Second Amendment was made, that wasn't what it meant. The government has a right to regulate gun control and gun ownership. All right? You know, there's a lot of folks in the big cities that probably never seen a gun, never owned a gun. Never shot a gun. Do you think it matters to them if guns are illegal? No. And it changed nothing about their life. All right? So here we are. We've got on a hot button here where there's something here that we're ready to resist the government.
We should give our guns to God and offer to take care of them.
Oh. I see.
He's gonna have to take care of
both of us.
No, no, please.
What if you were to lose your property or your freedom in America for the sole reason you were a Christian? What if they're gonna take away your property, everything you've got, for no other reason than the fact that you're a Christian? Would you join a underground, or what do you want to call it, uprising, an armed revolution that will cost people their lives?
That's a lot of red lines.
It is. It is. Now, I posed, throwed a lot of stuff at you, and I told you this was going to be a little different. I don't have answers to those things. I don't like something in myself that rears its ugly head when somebody tries to take mine. I don't like the way I feel. And I don't know the answer to all of these questions. But one thing I do know, I ought to welcome the opportunity to support my government if I benefit from it. If I benefit from it, and I do. And I ought to want to support it. Let's pray.